Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
Tuesday, 28 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Pickley Radenhuis, he asks the question, are we turning? It's a big question. Also, markets loving the NASPAS process results. Stephen Joffe from Invicta, on results, they're looking to get offshore revenue to 50% within 4 years. Where are they with that so far? And then Barry Shamley from Investec, finding the balance between the different components of ESG in what is truthfully an unequal world. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. PPC laments lack of cement sales growth from SA Infrastructure Program. Remember we spoke with Dr. Rulof Botha last week about the AfriMat Construction Index, and the big stick out from that was quite simply government isn't spending and hasn't been for 6 or 8 years. Business day, market loves surprise move by NASPAS to narrow value gap. The shares skyrocket, and skyrocket they did, after process retracts its idea to halt 10 cent sales. They're going to sell shares and fund buybacks. Morning markets, US was red, S&P off a third, NASDAQ off 0.8%. Asia's mixed with Sydney up 0.5%, Tokyo down 0.2%. Commodities mostly red overnight, gold 1,827. Brent, the green, at $116.58 a barrel. Platinum, 901. Palladium, 1,886. Rand, 1,587. Top 40 opening call for a 60-point red open. It's about 0.1%. 10 cents is trading down 4.8%. It had been up strongly Monday, but then, of course, the news that process is going to be selling them down.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Petri Radenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning time. From your weekly game plan, which you sent out Sunday evening, 2 points I want to touch on. The first is, I mean, you called it, are we turning? And you were looking particularly at U.S. markets. You make the point that during bear markets, you get some ripping rallies, and we might have some upside, but you think that ultimately we're probably still going lower.
Good morning. And yes, I think it's very tempting to sort of chase and try and catch the bottom, particularly after the market has run as hard as it did yesterday. And I'll admit, on Friday.
Yeah.
I'll admit that I kind of expected the session from the U.S. to be a positive one at the very least. I thought that perhaps we would get quite a bit of buying coming into the end of the quarter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a very tempting sort of bull trap to fall into. I guess the question is, are we turning around? Is this the bottom? Are we finally, is the correction over, and is it safe to come out of our, bomb shelters and start buying stock again? Or are we sort of in a situation where we're just seeing bear market rallies and the market is still going to grind, lower over time? I'll be honest with you. I think that it's the second of the two. That's mm-hmm. my personal view. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm right, but the way that I see it is there's no real change to the macroeconomic backdrop, right? We have an inflation problem. There's no two ways about that. I don't know if you've been, seeing some of the news that
yeah.
I think, most Americans are going to get another $1,050 or $1,080 or something like that as inflation relief. And this is more money they're going to print. I mean, how is this supposed to work?
It just feels more inflation. I mean, that's where we are now. So two fun stats. Half the biggest green days ever are in bear markets, and average bear market minus 36% in the U.S. We're not even close to that yet. And
I think we're at 25% around there somewhere.
Around it was around 24, and then of course that face ripping rally on Friday. Let's quickly move to NASPAS, because of course results came out yesterday from NASPAS. Process. They're going to be selling 10 cent shares to buy back process shares, and the market liked it. The market liked it a heck of a lot. And you were saying that around what 2,330 is the important level, and that's almost pretty much smack where it closed.
I did not imagine that would be the case yesterday. Yeah. I've not seen such a big cap company move that way in a long time, right? But yeah, I mean, I think in the intro you spoke about it as well. It's shareholders in Naspers have Naspers, and I'm going to just lump Naspers and Prosus together in one thing here, right? But shareholders have basically been sitting impatiently, grumbling about the valuation gap and how you know the Naspers' stake in Tencent is worth like 30% more than what the Naspers valuation is. So, I mean, that gap closed almost completely yesterday. Well, not almost completely, but I mean, it has really been a very sharp, fast move. And I think we probably see another positive, strong day today, despite Tencent being down, to really sort of close that valuation gap. I think it's going to close a lot quicker than we realize, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I hope that, well, there's a couple of reasons also why it's a good idea, I think, to have a little bit of Naspers. And I know, you know, some time ago, I was quite bearish the stock. I think you and I even spoke about it. However, there are, you know, obviously recently this valuation sort of news changed, right? Where Naspers will be selling some Tencent and using the money to buy back some of its own shares, which is obviously going to be supportive of the stock. But also, if you look at, I mean, they're not going to sell their entire stake in Tencent. And even if they do, it's going to take them a mighty long time, right? If you look at, I think, the regulatory sort of changes in China, it's starting to look as if, one, the Chinese economy is going to come out ahead of the sort of economic warfare that's happening at the moment between the East and the West. I think if we look at the Western sort of economies and developed markets, they're really in a very tough spot in terms of, you know, where they're going to find economic growth coming from over the next 5 to 10 years. Well, you know, we have inflation problems. We have, you know, recession is basically looming and or around the corner. And I think that the Chinese market is probably positioned to recover faster from this recent COVID crash and all that stuff.
And come out of it stronger, perhaps. And I take your point. And he turned it there. And just a quick point in the process, that discount, which was 60%, and I'm using slightly old data. This is a spreadsheet from end of last quarter. But it has gone from 60% discount to 47% discount. Bekele Rodenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you think that Naspers and Prosus trend has now moved up? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn, Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Trading with Stephen Joffe, CEO of Invicta. Results to year-end March, the two big numbers, revenue up 15%, diluted earnings per share from continuing operations, plus 168%. Stephen, appreciate your time today. Your revenue, $7.2 billion, is about 30% almost below March 2020, which is pre-pandemic. But Invicta is a very different business. I mean, most notably, smaller, slimmer, and profitable.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two notable transactions that have made most of that difference. The first one is the sale of our agri businesses to C&H last year.
Yeah.
But much more significantly, Q&N used to be consolidated into our accounts. And we sold 48%, we retained 48.8% stake in Q&N. And we have a Chinese partner who owns 48.8% stake. And then we have the local CEO in Singapore who owns 2%. And as a result of that, we reflect Q&N now as a joint venture. So if you had to really account for that, we would be more than and up on the pre-COVID turnover numbers.
Gotcha. Okay, and that's accounting because of that 50% threshold. You mentioned the results that you're looking to target 50% of revenue from outside of South Africa within about 4 years. What is your offshore revenue at the moment?
So we focus on profit in that regard because, again, Key and Ann would be just, it wouldn't come in as revenue or come in as profit line, but at the profit line, we probably had about 30%. And I think that's one of the factors that people don't appreciate with Invector. We are a small company, but, you know, 30% of our business at the moment is already offshore, which is quite an incredible achievement for a small company. Our goal in the short term is to get that up to 50%. And we really are looking to grow in markets where we're already present, and we've got a foundation and knowledge base.
When we chatted, I suppose it was towards the end of last year, there was acquisition of the dot-com group. That got cancelled in February due to conditions, let's say. I imagine a lot of this, that extra revenue is going to be acquisition and from what you've just said, kind of more bolt-on than big ones.
Yeah, absolutely. We've really spent a lot of time thinking about a strategy and focusing on the areas of earth-moving, auto, agri, industrial, and our capital equipment businesses, and really understanding what it is that we do well. And we're looking for businesses that fit into those niches and complement our offering. And, you know, when you do find those, I think there's a lot more added value that you can bring to the table.
Your auto agri, which you mentioned, I mean, one of the smaller divisions, doing very well, of course, as farmers benefit from rains, from higher crop prices. But you did have Ukraine business there, which you impaired. But that really is frankly negligible in terms of profits.
Yeah, because about 14 million rand, quite an extraordinary situation that our warehouse was in an area called a city called Cherniv. And it's right on the Belarus border, and just by the end of the end of our financial year, the Russians invaded Cherniv. So at our year end, we just took a decision to impair the entire business. Since then, the Russians have withdrawn, and we're busy taking the inventory to our new warehouse in Lviv, where we decided to relocate, which is on the Poland border. But the bridge between Cherniv and Kyiv, where we have to go through, has been blown up. So we have to take literally bucky loads of inventory and drive them through that way. And that's how we're busy relocating.
And of course, and the war literally happened 4 days, March, so not quite, 5 weeks before your year end. You mentioned industrials. Industrials is your largest segment. Revenue up there, 8.4%. I was digging through, because the question I was going to say to you was, you know, who do you service in the industrial space? And the more I dug, the more it's kind of an open-ended question, because it is just, it's almost all over the place. And I don't mean that in a disparaging sense, but it's a proper industrial group with niche products.
Yeah, and you know, like in South Africa, there's almost a BMG in every town, and pretty much every industrial client would basically draw on BMG directly or indirectly through their suppliers. And you know, that's what's been the difficulty with such a tough operating environment, where factories are closing. Every time a business closes, indirectly or directly, it's one of our customers.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was just it.
I mean, and that's the challenge.
Yeah, that was just it. I mean, it's so spread that you know, as businesses struggle, as businesses get load shed, it hits you. Inventories, you've touched on it before. You're well down on where you were pre-pandemic, and some of that might be the consolidation, but it ticked a little higher this year. Are you still struggling with supply chains, or was this a preemptive move?
It's a bit of both. So if you think through this year with the price increases that with all the supply chain shortages, and so you there's certainly been some inflation in our basket of products. Over and above that, with the supply chain challenges, a lot of our businesses have asked us to increase their stock holding to try and mitigate the risk of stockouts. And by and large, because of our financial health at the moment, we've agreed to that. So we've probably increased in many businesses like 1 month stock holding.
Okay.
And it really stands us in good stead.
Yeah. You mentioned in inflation there. Are you seeing much price pressure, and are you able to pass much, if not all of it, onto your customers?
So, Simon, like our GP, especially in our industrial South African business, declined by 1%.
Okay.
What we try and do is do everything in our own power to try and absorb the cost without having to put the increases through.
Yeah.
And the team have been remarkably, like this year, really focused on trying to do that. But it gets to a point that there's nothing further you can do. And then, unfortunately, you're going to have to sit down with your partners and customers and ask them if they can pass some increases through on them.
Yeah, point taken. You can do so much, but eventually the lemon is dry. We'll leave it there. Stephen Joffe, CEO Invicta, appreciate the time as always.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLiv, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlip.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLiv Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Barry Shamley, Equity Fund Manager at Investec Wealth and Investment International. Barry, appreciate the early morning time. A note you sent out last week talking around finding balance between the different components of ESG in an unequal world. We talk around the global issues of climate change and the like, but we're kind of like ignoring the conflicts between the E, the S, the G, particularly when we have structural inequality and we need to find a better balance perhaps.
Thanks, yes. Good morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on your show. It is a tricky question. I think it's a lot easily understandable living in an emerging market like South Africa, where you can see these inequalities on a daily basis and understand the impact that may be changing somebody's life by sort of ending one particular industry and replacing it with another can have. But I think the world has changed in the past few years. I think the war in Russia has been part of the reason for that change. And the ESG has, in itself has become a little bit more nuanced and deliberate in its thinking, where it was more of a blanket approach in the past. I think people really do now understand that different things matter in different jurisdictions, and you've got to take a holistic view and understand the impact of each decision you make and try and, after weighing all of those decisions up, make the best decision for that specific community or country as a whole.
Almost in a sense. I mean, we've been trading ESG in this show since inception. Obviously, as a concept, it's been around for a long time. It's kind of maybe almost ESG growing up and actually doing what it's meant to do on the sticker, rather than just being a label you can attach, but actually doing, you know, good in an environmental and particularly social aspect.
Absolutely. I think it's just a continual process of refinement. Nothing is sort of born perfectly or developed perfectly, and I think we'll go through a number of iterations. So, I mean, it sometimes upsets me when there's that very negative press, but I think that's actually needed in some cases to keep it on track and to keep it moving in the right direction, where it doesn't create distortions or you have sort of funny outcomes as a result of a more blanket approach. And I think each year it gets better. And I think ESG integration as a whole is almost becoming a default for many investment managers now. And that extra step of sustainability is something that you may want to consider in your investment process. So I think a lot of people have just realized it's just really a good framework for understanding material issues that may not have a financial impact in the short term, but certainly longer term they may do, and making sure you account for those in your valuations.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, often, as you say, in the short term, we're not going to see them on an income statement or anything like that, but in longer term, they certainly will. Do we have conditions? Do we have sort of the right space in South Africa for ESG and responsibility to sort of assert itself in the market? You make the point that sometimes it gets bad press, not always a bad thing, and that it is kind of growing up in a sense.
Yeah, I think we're seeing it move along at different rates in the world. Europe was certainly the leaders in it. I think UK is not far behind, but more reluctance in the US. I think it is moving ahead there. I think there have been a number of positive developments in South Africa, and I think there have been papers, I don't remember the technical term for it, in terms of Reg 28, where trustees are required to consider whether ESG has been integrated, and if not, explain why. So I think the market is moving in that direction. I think also you're starting to see a new consumer investor coming through. I think millennials are far more sensitive to the impact their money may have. So a lot of them do ask that question. And we've almost been surprised to an extent where in our sustainable fund that we run, we've always said we don't think you'd be giving up in performance. But a lot of investors that are quite focused on it say they don't mind giving up a little bit. But One of my colleagues used the example of a Tesla, which may or may not be a great example, but really, if you do this right and you're making the best products for the future, you should be doing better than everybody else. In fact, I think Larry Fink said at the start of the year something to the extent that he believed the next 1,000 unicorns were going to be out of the climate tech space. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in this space, and I certainly don't think you have to give up on returns. I think you just have to have a longer-term mindset.
Yeah, a longer-term mindset, which frankly does fit in with the whole investment philosophy. Barry Shamley, Equity Fund Manager, Investec Wharton Investment International. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. A poll yesterday, we were chatting with Nkunza from Sanlam Private Wealth on that recent market selling. We asked you the question, as we asked Pierre Tree this morning, do you think we've seen the lows of this bear? Yes, but it was less than 10% of you were saying yes. A third of you were saying, I hope so, and I'm in that camp. But 60% said nope, more downside coming. That's certainly what Pierre Tree seems to think. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, MoneyWeb website to the app, 6:30 a.m, podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.